We're back. Dr. Frederick Luskin has completed extensive research on the training and measurement of forgiveness. His research demonstrates that learning forgiveness leads to increased physical vitality, hope, enhanced optimism, and conflict resolution skills. It also shows that forgiveness lessens the physical and emotional toll of stress, decreases hurt, anger, depression, and blood pressure. Dr. Luskin is the director of the Stanford University Forgiveness Projects, and he also serves as the co-chair of the Garden of Forgiveness Project at Ground Zero in Manhattan. Welcome, Dr. Frederick Luskin, to Talk with Francesca. How are you today?
I'm doing fine, thanks. How about yourself?
Good. Thanks for being here. So I've always... Pardon me?
We are getting the beginning of what looks like winter here.
Where are you?
In California, but it's starting to rain.
Oh, please. You got to be kidding me. Rain is not winter. What is it, about 75 degrees there?
Not quite, but I understand what you're hinting at.
Okay. All right. Well, anyway, I've always wondered about this forgiveness project. I remember someone mentioning it to me years ago. But I know nothing about it. Can you tell the folks listening a little bit about it?
About the Forgiveness Project?
Yeah.
You know, what we did was back in the 90s when psychology was turning from what's wrong with people to what's right with people, we turned from what makes people angry to what helps people let it go. Mm-hmm. And we set up a research and training program on forgiveness, which didn't focus primarily on people's anger, but focused primarily on people's capacity to release anger.
Mm-hmm.
So that would be my statement of what the Forgiveness Project began as.
And so how does forgiveness and health kind of go hand in hand?
Well, that's really simple, because when you're unforgiving, your body is just riddled with stress.
Mm-hmm.
The stress of things didn't work out the way you want, people didn't treat you the way you wanted, just the agitation
mm-hmm.
of that's different than you wanted. And forgiveness resolves that stress.
But, it's easy to say, did you forgive that person? But, you know, what really is forgiveness? I mean, really?
It's a change in story.
Okay.
From poor me to successful me. That's really what it is. It's a story that evolves from whining and self-pity and resentment and blame to one that has more acceptance of life and more taking of responsibility for how we each live our lives.
So, practically speaking, how does one go about doing that?
You know, I've written two pretty best-selling books on that, Forgive for Good and Forgive for Love. It's not that complicated. Part of it, related to what we talked about before, is learning to manage the stress of being upset. And so that is an essential part of this. So there are just simple stress management practices that one can do whenever you get bent out of shape by something.
But if that were that easy, there wouldn't be so many people walking around mad. So I mean, there's got to be. It may sound simple, but I don't think it's quite as simple as you're making it.
It's simple, but it's not easy. And those are very different things.
Okay, explain that.
We live in a world where anger and self-righteousness are valued. And that's the biggest reason why it's hard. If we lived in a world where cooperation and, say, grudge management were valued, it would be a lot easier. You don't get rewards talking to people that you were nice when somebody wasn't nice. You get cultural rewards for standing up for yourself, for battling, for drawing your lines, for all that other stuff. That's
claiming your power.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, but I mean, so are you saying? So I'm a little confused. So what is it exactly that you're saying? That doesn't quite make sense to me. I mean, we do need to stand on our own two feet and have inner strength. And
sure, we do, but we don't have to be mad. That mad is more a sign of very little inner strength. and mad substitutes for inner strength, actually. And so when we're helplessly mad over time, it means we don't have inner strength, and we have to release adrenaline to make up for that. And that's the weakness, and that you see that all over this world with the ridiculous violence and antagonisms that exist everywhere. And you see it rip apart families.
Like
if you
how?
If you could just stand your ground and talk about what it is that upsets you, the world would be entirely different. And if we got support for that, oh, good, you didn't go over the top. Oh, good, you were kind in the way you talked. Oh, good, you treated the person with respect. That's what I meant by culture.
That's very interesting, but it's a little bit confusing. There are certainly some hurts that are far easier to forgive than others. Pardon me?
Of course.
And so, I don't know. I'm just trying to think of an example, and I can't come up with one right off the top. But just thinking,
I can come up with many of them for you.
Okay, go ahead. Give me one, and something that's really difficult to forgive. And then, so you're saying, just contain yourself and don't get mad, and just forgive that person.
Get mad for a short period of time, just to let you know that something wrong happened, and then work on letting go of the anger so you can keep your brain functioning. So some of the stuff that we've worked with that's ridiculous to get over is the murder of a child. And some of the stuff that we've worked with that is ridiculous to hold on to is somebody said something that was disrespectful to me, or somebody improved their property an inch onto my property lines. I've dealt with all those, and I've seen people get furious at each.
So what's a better way to deal with it? Something serious, a serious hurt. How does someone get over a serious hurt? What about 9/11? I mean, that's serious.
We dealt with that too.
Right. So tell us how.
You know, the bad answer that I'm going to give is that you have to be willing to suffer. And it's an unwillingness to feel the legitimate grief, the pain of loss, that makes people struggle more than anything else. That they are not willing to acknowledge their phenomenal vulnerability and pain, so they show anger instead.
And what you're claiming is that is very unhealthy to feel that anger.
Well, for feel it for too long. It's not necessarily unhealthy to feel anger. Anger is a very useful thing.
I think it is. Not to be out there raging, but I do think it's important when you're angry to express your anger. And sometimes people do raise their voices and get a little crazy.
Actually, you know, it's much less useful to express your anger than you might think.
I'm sorry, say that again?
If you've been in any long-term relationship, you see that doesn't often get you what you want. It just gets somebody else angry. And the way that anger is actually really helpful is it shows us that something wrong happened.
Right.
That there's been a violation, a boundary was crossed, right? And then hopefully at some point you don't act on that unless there's real danger. But you allow the anger to pass so that your whole brain can go about figuring out what's the best thing to do.
How about the person that hurt the person who is angry? Well, for example, like if a woman were violated, or a man, whatever, and the person was... Does it help that the perpetrator, in other words, apologizes? Does that make it better for the person who's been hurt?
If it's a sincere apology, almost always.
And what if it's what if the person doesn't accept that, then what?
Again, a sincere apology is often accepted. A sincere apology is... It was my bad. It was my fault.
It was my what?
What I did hurt you. I don't necessarily have excuses, and let me see what I can do to make it better for you, not to make me feel better.
Not to make me feel better?
Yeah, because often apologies, the fake apologies are, I'm sorry that you feel bad. Like as if the person feeling bad is the one at fault. I'm sorry that what I did hurt you. Like as if the person taking the offense somehow made a mistake. A real apology is, oh my God, I screwed up. What I did caused what you have experienced, and I am deeply sorry for that link. It's an explicit link. And please tell me what I can do to make it right.
And what happens when the person doesn't make an apology? What does the person do with that anger then? I'm talking again about a serious, you know, something very, very traumatic.
It's very hard because, you know, none of us, again, want to confront our incredible vulnerability to life. And so much of it hinges on that. We just hate the fact that we can be hurt, that people we love can die, that people are unpredictable. We just don't know how to live in that reality.
Right, exactly, right. So how do you?
Well, I mean, that's one of the challenges is to, you know, is to, instead of just getting mad, to learn to feel the pain of that for a while.
To accept.
Which also develops empathy for other suffering people.
Right.
Anger usually doesn't develop empathy, but some suffering and acknowledgement of vulnerability does.
Right.
And then when you, like, work that through, you're left with a greater sense of power that you can handle life,
mm-hmm.
and a little more interest in other people's pain.
So did
that's just,
mm-hmm. So did you get into this project because something had happened to you that was very tragic, or some reason personally
not tragic, but very painful? I had a very close friend abandon me very harshly and very insensitively, with almost no explanation, and you know, a relationship that was very important to me was severed almost overnight. And I was absolutely unprepared for how to deal with it.
So can you share a little bit about that? Would you mind doing that? That's interesting. It's when you say abandoned, was this a buddy or somebody, you know?
Yeah, it was a close friend. And what I developed was the Stanford Forgiveness Project.
Based on that. So you were obviously devastated.
I was devastated, and it took me years. I mean, I became a real pain in the butt because my faith in life was challenged. You know, if like one of the closest people in my life could hurt me like this, then nothing is safe.
Right, right.
And from that, I realized that that's the core of the issue.
That people feel unsafe, and then they get, when they're hurt, and they get angry.
And get angry to make believe they're making themselves safer.
But they're not, because...
Not at all.
So what does make them feel, what does make them feel safer?
Well, you know, it's not safe to blow out your coronary arteries.
We'll talk about that in just a second. If you're just tuning in, you're listening to Talk with Francesca. I'm talking on the phone with Dr. Frederick Luskin, who is the director of the Stanford University Forgiveness Projects. Okay, so let's talk about health a little bit. You said blowing out your coronary arteries. What does that is there scientific evidence that being angry hurts you physically?
Yeah, well, it's one of anger and hostility
mm-hmm.
are one of the leading risk factors for cardiovascular disease.
So being angry, people feel safer when they're angry. They can't get hurt.
Well, it's they get angry because they're not feeling safe, and then they make believe that that is a good substitute for some other kind of power or safety. That's all.
Well, you know, fear and anger are actually very closely related. I mean, you're ever driving down the road and someone cuts you off and you're nearly killed, and what's the first thing you do? You go into a violent rage, right?
You just answered the absolutely critical question that fear and anger are unbelievably linked.
Yeah, they really are, aren't they? And I think the more angry someone is, the more fearful they are.
You know, I don't know. I don't know that I would think so.
Yeah. Well, I mean, I'm just asking. I'm just sort of guessing here. I have no idea myself. You're the expert, but it would seem.
And I don't know the answer to that. I would have the same guess that you do.
Mm-hmm. So let's get back to that personal situation, because I think it's interesting that you had this very close person that abandoned you. And how did you end up resolving it? Were you able to communicate with that person and say, you know, what happened, what went wrong, and were you able to work it through and get back to being friends, or what came of it?
I mean, what actually happened was that I communicated with him, and it was very unsatisfying, his response.
Mm-hmm.
And then I realized, when I got super duper upset over his response,
mm-hmm.
that I was the one making myself crazy, not him. And that's how the Stanford Forgiveness Project came about. That when I saw how much I raised my blood pressure because I got a response from him that I didn't like.
Mm-hmm.
That's when I realized, oh, my God, Fred, look what you're doing to yourself. You're giving this person so much power over you. You better give your power away a lot more wisely.
Mm.
And that's when I changed.
So let's talk about how we learn to forgive ourselves when we've done something that we don't feel good about and we'd like to forgive ourselves. How do we do that? I mean, I know sometimes if I feel really badly about something that I've done, I mean, I can really get into like berating myself. And this is a bit, actually, personally, this is a big one for me. And
how do we forgive ourselves?
Yeah, well, of course, because we make mistakes, obviously, all the time. And sometimes we make bigger mistakes than others, and we do hurt people. Just living your life, you hurt people. You don't necessarily mean to. I don't think people sit around saying, how am I going to hurt X, you know, X, Y, and Z today? But we do. But sometimes I think that, you know, we realize that we've done something to hurt someone in some way or feel guilty, and it's hard to forgive ourselves, or something, you know, an action we've taken.
You're asking a question that comes up often, which is, some people say it is really hard to forgive themselves, and mm-hmm. other people don't have that same struggle. It's not a uniform thing. It's like some people forgive themselves for things that you wish they wouldn't.
Yeah.
I would say that in this world, the bigger problem is people are too self-forgiving, not that they're not forgiving enough. I would say that the world is harmed much more by people's acceptance of their terrible behavior than it is by a lack of forgiveness. That's just my take mm-hmm. on things, that I just see awful behavior that people go, yeah, that's just the way I am.
So are you a psychologist? Or?
Yeah, I am a psychologist.
So do you see patients? Do you deal with people?
I don't. I see very few individual patients. I do a lot of teaching.
Mm-hmm.
And I occasionally still do some research projects. But mm-hmm. so if you want to look at self-forgiveness, which is a wonderful idea when you've really struggled legitimately with your own bad behavior, because mm-hmm. I do believe that it's an essential thing to learn.
Mm-hmm.
The key question is, did you try to make it right? Like, that's the key question. Like, self-forgiveness has to do with, like, after Did you try your best to make amends, to apologize, to change? If you did that, then it's absolutely essential to let it go, to not beat yourself up anymore, to not make yourself into an enemy or a bad person.
Mm-hmm.
But if you didn't make an effort to clean up your mess, then self-forgiveness is not a good thing.
Mm-hmm.
It's not healthy or helpful. And so that's the key quality is, like, did you, and I mean this, did you like take your broom out,
mm-hmm,
and clean up your mess? And if you did, even if they didn't accept the cleanup, that's all you can do.
Right.
You know, you can't force somebody to forgive you you can't even force yourself to be perfect. Like, you still may fail.
Mm-hmm. Right.
But did you make your best effort?
Well, that gets into another whole category of self-love, really. But, you know, you can get culturally, you know, sometimes, like, certain cultures, you brought up with guilt. You know, it's a primary way of existing in some families. And so, you know, you can sort of carry this guilt thing and not forgive yourself. That's kind of what I'm talking about.
Well, guilt it does nobody any good, because it's like anger.
Mm-hmm.
It's not aimed at anything useful.
Mm-hmm.
What is useful is examining oneself to see where one erred or failed, mm-hmm, and trying to change.
So we
guilt
just.
Is,
I'm sorry.
Guilt
go ahead.
Is instead of that.
Mm-hmm. So. We just have a few minutes left, but I'm just wondering, does forgiving mean looking at a person who's harmed you with fresh eyes?
Help me understand that question.
Well, what I'm saying is, does forgiving mean looking at the person who's harmed you, who's hurt you, like with sort of an open heart, is what I'm saying.
It is,
and letting go. But what if the person's, like, repeatedly hurt you and keeps hurting, has hurt you, and I'm sorry, but it happens again, I'm sorry it happens again. And how do you forgive that person and look at them again with fresh eyes, like, I'm going to be open to this person again? How do you?
You don't have to do that. I mean, I remember when we started the Forgiveness Project, we made it very clear that, like, forgiveness is not the same as getting a lobotomy. You know, you still have to think, and if there's somebody out there who's not good for you, stay away.
Right.
That's not forgiveness. That's stupidity.
Mm.
So you can forgive them for being, like, not good for you and not see them again. It's the hardness of heart that your forgiveness works on.
I got it. Okay.
You know, it's very different to say, this person's just not good for me. You know, they're not good for me. They're not good for anybody. And right. One of the changes can be they're not going to improve. And so I need to take care of myself. That's another fresh vision that you're talking about.
Mm-hmm.
A fresh vision doesn't always have to be, you know, angels coming down from heaven.
Right.
It can be that, wow, I really see this person now clearly. Mm-hmm. They're who they are.
Yep.
They're not going to change.
Yep. Got it.
I'm out of here.
Yeah, I got it. Okay, I just have one more question left, and then we've got to wrap it up. Are there levels of forgiveness?
There. Somebody has proposed that there's two pretty distinct kind of aspects of it. And one of them is, like, the decision to forgive and then the emotions that accompany it. And I have found that to be helpful, that, you know, everybody, not everybody, but when you decide to forgive, this kind of, oh, okay, it's time for me to forgive.
Got it.
Then comes some of the work to make it happen. Those would be the two levels that I would see, and they don't often coincide.
Fantastic. Okay, Dr. Frederick Luskin, director of the Stanford University Project, thank you for being on Talk with Francesca today. Appreciate it.
Oh, you're very welcome. Take care.
Okay. All right, it's time to say until next week, but you don't have to wait until next week for us to chat. Send me an email at host@talkwithfrancesca.com, and I'll get right back to you. And if you want to know more about what's on the horizon at Talk with Francesca, visit my website and click on upcoming shows. Have a fantastic week, and I hope I gave you something to talk about.